Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 71st Venice International Film Festival, and today I'm in company of James Franco, actor and director of The Sound of the Fury. So when you were working on SLA Dying, did you already know that you wanted to do this?
No, I didn't. Although these books, SLA Dying and Sound of the Fury, were two of my favorite books when I was a teenager. But I guess I thought I would only do one Faulkner, and then I'm trying to think how this came about. I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of books that I have the rights to, a lot of movies that I want to make. I guess this just seemed like the right one at that time. I don't know.
How do you usually pick the books? Do you think that most of the classic literature is cinematic?
No, not at all. No, I read a lot of books. You know, I'm going for my degree in English, so I read a ton of English and American literature. But not every book I read, I think, you know, oh, this would make a great movie. And some people would say, well, how did you think that SLA Dying or Sound of Fury could make a good movie? But I think it's, in the case of those two movies and those two books, I saw that they were written in experimental ways. They had these very complex structures and writing styles, but that there were very strong characters and a strong, I wouldn't say a strong story at the center of each film, but they had kind of a strong drive. Like, there was just movement. Even though the narratives are fractured, they move. And so I thought they would enable me to make these unusual experimental films and still have them be grounded, because the characters have strong emotional needs and drives and connections, and that it wouldn't just be fragmentation without any direction, that in fact the fragmentation is moving somewhere. It's just that we're not used to a story being told that way.
Do you come up with the idea first and then plan how to shoot it, or the opposite?
Yes. I always try to have to work it out a fair amount beforehand, knowing an approach that we're going to take, but not knowing if it's going to work, because usually they're, you know, it's these things that I've never tried before. So in the case of As I Lay Dying, you know, there were, each chapter in the book is told from the perspective of a different person, a different character, and I thought, well, I want to capture something of that multi-perspectival kind of approach. And so I thought, well, maybe we could do split screen, and it would kind of feel like there's more eyes than one, you know, just looking on the scenes, more perspectives than one. We shot it that way, think we were going to do that way, but we also shot it so that if that didn't work, you know, we could have just made it, you know, a one-channel kind of piece. Here, we kind of committed to this fractured approach, but within that approach, we had kind of leeway to work things out in post, meaning there's different time frames in each of the sections. You know, there's their character's present, which is 1928, and then it'll go back to 1910 or 1900. And so we could shoot material for each of those time frames and have an idea of how we thought they would fit together in the final piece. But we shot it in such a way that we knew, well, we'll just shoot a, you know, like, for example, in this first section, the Benji section, we'll shoot a lot of other impressionistic stuff. And we'll shoot more than we know that we'll ever need. But it'll be like, for the editor, it'll be these different colors that when he goes to paint the final canvas, it's like, oh, I've got some of that, and I could put that here, and I got, and that works well here. And I know that they wanted this piece to come here, but actually it works better over here. And so it was really a matter of just getting a lot of strong pieces and then seeing how they work together. And so in the end, I guess that's all to say, we had an idea of how we thought it would be pieced together before we shot it, but in the end, in some ways, it was very different.
Have you decided from the beginning that you wanted to play Benji?
Yeah, I didn't have anybody else in mind for that. I guess I thought, I don't know if people believe me or not. I prefer not to act in the movies that I direct. So in Child of God that was here last year, I had a very, very small part. And in the Bukowski film, I don't have a role at all. But I found that in some ways, it does make it easier. You know, these movies are unconventional. They are, you know, it's not easy, as easy to get financing for these movies as it is for a superhero movie, you know. So it does help if I act in them to get, you know, money. And I don't, you know, it's like if I can play a role, it keeps me, you know, one of the things that I hate as a filmmaker is all the stuff you have to go through to get a movie made. I hate all that stuff. I hate pitches. I hate meetings. I hate having to send people the script and say, oh, do you like it or what do I have to change to get... that is the worst. The business side is the worst part of filmmaking for me. And so if I can get around that by acting in a movie, then it's fine. You know, I'll do it. And if it means getting the movie made, fine, I'll do it. As far as once I took it on, you know, actually doing the role, you know, I approached that role the same way that I approached the movie as a director. I said, I'm going to be as loyal as I can to the source. So as a director, it's like, I'm going to try and take on the structure of the film, the book. And as an actor, I don't know if his depiction of Benji in the book is accurate, if it's actually based on anybody real or not. But I said to myself, that doesn't matter. All you have to do is capture what he's written in the book. And that's my goal. And so it was, you know, it's a character who's mute. He's basically just obsessed with his sister who's gone away. And it says in the book, you know, he can't speak, but he bellows, or he kind of makes noises. And so I just, as an actor, those were my five obstructions or whatever, you know, my three obstructions. It's like, you can't speak, but you need to be able to convey your longing for your sister through behavior, through facial expressions, through inarticulate sounds. And that's how I did it.
Well, didn't you think that it could turn out also as a risky choice?
No, I'm not going to read any reviews because I know that, you know, people will be like, oh my, James Franco dares to do Benji or whatever. Like, I mean, you know, I'm sure people will be skeptical going in, and maybe it'll be hard for them to separate me and my public persona from the character. But, you know, I think I'm proud of the performance. You know, when I look at it, it's like, I don't think I would do anything differently.
You worked on a lot of projects as a director, actor, teacher, writer. Would you consider yourself as a workaholic?
No, I'm not a workaholic. I mean, a workaholic, I guess, is someone who can't stop working or has some deep-rooted need to do these things. I think what I've found is, you know, maybe that, and that I'm sure that was the case for me when I was younger, that I needed to prove myself. As a lot of, you know, as every young person maybe feels a need to do, or young artist needs to do. But I'm very proud of a lot of things that I've been able to do in my career. So I really feel less of a need to prove myself nowadays or to make a name for myself. And a lot of that, you know, I think is reflected in my, you know, the fact that I teach now. You know, it's not like all of my endeavors are just focused on me and trying to get my work out there. Like, I spend a significant part of my week, every week, looking at other people's work and helping other people develop and giving them opportunities. But I do a lot of things, and I think it's just that I've learned that for me, that's the best way to live. You know, I mean, a lot of people with jobs that they don't like, I'm sure, think of vacation in a very different way than I do. They need to get away from work because they hate it. I love my work, you know, and not only that, I get to work with all my friends and loved ones and work on projects that I love. So I don't want to get away from that. I just want to keep going back to that. That's where I'm most happy.
You often work with your actor and producer friends. So what kind of atmosphere does this provide you? And do you need that atmosphere to work?
I don't need that atmosphere. Obviously, I've done projects that are not with my friends. But I've found that the movies that I direct, it is important for me to have that group. Because I'm making particular kinds of movies, you know. I make these movies because I love the subjects, I love the projects, I love, you know, what we're all trying to do. And not to say that, you know, when I do a movie like This Is the End, that I don't also love it and think that it's a very innovative movie, but you know, they're also making that with a studio, and there is, they are, you know, Seth is unashamedly, you know, audience-minded. He wants the audience to laugh as much as possible. He wants the audience to like it as much as possible. So they do many, many tests. They try many, many different versions. And, you know, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in wanting people to enjoy your movie. But I think for me, I'm just trying to make movies that I love and that I don't see other people making. And so, yes, I want an audience to like it, but them liking it is secondary to being loyal to the project and faithful to the source that we're adapting.
Did you include Seth Rogen's cameo in the movie because he wanted to lighten up the mood?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like Seth suddenly broke out into stand-up comedy or something like that, but I found that sometimes it's nice to throw in something unexpected in these kinds of movies. That if you don't have those unexpected moments of either extreme violence in some cases, or extreme sexuality, or in the case of Child of God, or here, you know, putting in Danny McBride and Seth in there just momentarily, like, I think it kind of wakes the audience up a little bit, like, wait, what? What's going on? And it takes it out of, it takes the movie out of the kind of history lesson or school lesson feel of, oh, it's an American classic, okay, we have to do our duty and watch the American classic. Like, it gives it a little bit more vitality, like, you know, unexpectedness. And so I think that's why I put him in.
Thank you, James Franco, for being here with us on Fred Film Radio. This is Chiara Nicoletti from the 71st Venice International Film Festival for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.